United States submarine base at Key West, Florida. A dispatch that quoted President Truman's press secretary, Charles Ross, as saying that President Truman has no knowledge of any secret project by this government that would give substance to the existence of such objects. Ross also said that both the Air Force and the Navy deny that such objects exist.
Hi.
Hi.
You're breathing into the mic. Just right off the bat, just
immediately. I sent you a voice memo, you and Typhoid Taylor, the other day, and I listened to it back, and I was like,
yeah, girl.
Now I know what you're saying. I'm like, Jesus, the asthma is bad.
Yeah. Do you think I lied to you?
I don't.
Do you
I
think I
you
say
don't.
It to, like, get off? Like, what do you mean? Of course you sound like that.
So, sometimes I imagine what you hear is a little, and you just go feral. Listening to that,
you sound like fucking Don Vito.
Yeah,
that's a
I
reference
sound
for those
terrible.
Who get it. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like you can't fucking breathe.
I wonder if I legitimately have to take my inhaler before we start talking. I wonder if
probably
recording Patreon tuckers me out.
Yeah, dude. There. Yeah, I can't wait for you to get your little fish cage surgery.
October. I think I'm going to push the surgery back so I can go to AEW.
I actually think that's so smart.
Because here's my thoughts. If I push it closer to Halloween, then I can have a super fucked up face and I can incorporate it into my costume and I can just go as like a 2000s girl addicted to plastic surgery.
That's true. That would be fun. And a great excuse to buy a juicy velour tracksuit.
I want one so fucking bad. I went to Ross earlier today. We're going off tangent. This is so stupid. I hate when we do this. But they had so much Juicy Couture stuff that was so cheap. And I was like, I was like picking apples in the orchard with all the Juicy Couture stuff.
Yeah. Mitch said that my tracksuit was not cheap. But I was like, you didn't get it from Ross, though. You went to Juicy's website. That was the problem.
Yeah. The
problem for him, not for me.
I think probably $300 or $400 easy because I get the email notifications because I'm just biding my time to where I can buy one on sale. But they go on sale and they're like 15% off and they're still $300 or $400. Like they're insane.
Yeah, but you know, that tracksuit really fucking ate the house down. So,
you know, he argued with us about that.
Yeah, I know. You told
Stupid.
Me. He didn't believe that it would be the best purchase he could make. But, you know, we all make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes.
True.
Everybody has those days. Also, I just watched you. Sorry for the tangent again. Oh, what the fucking worst. I just saw you drink from the last year's Halloween edition at Starbucks. And you and Ty have the grandes. You have the little guys. I was the only one who got the venti. Mm-hmm. And it fell off of the back of my car. Like I put it on the back of my car and like was taking my laundry basket out and it fell out.
That's your emotional support cup.
I know. And it like was, it broke. But like shout out to them. It like broke in half. And then I took glue and tried to like glue it back together, but it just looks like jizz inside of it. And so it's like gone now. I can't use it anymore. And
you know, what's crazy is I got this cup from you. Mm-hmm. And we were going to Vegas last year.
Yeah.
We have to get you a new cup.
I've been looking on
Vegas.
I've been looking on eBay and they are
for these specific ones.
Yeah, for the venti studded glow in the dark Halloween Starbucks cup. They're like $35.
Oh, that might be worth it. You can get one off of Amazon for like $32.99. Like it is expensive, but wasn't this like $20?
Yeah, it was like almost the same. But the difference is like I didn't pay for it. So now I'll have to pay for it so it like doesn't feel as good.
I paid for mine. So that's – well, you paid for mine and then I sent you a Venmo.
Yeah. So
maybe
I've been using this.
Halloween this year it will come out. Ugh.
I saw a – you know, this is the best cup ever. It's like – it looks like S-M and you get it at Target and it is better than a Stanley cup and it does not – have lead in it like a Stanley cup does. This keeps my drink cold inside of a hot car. It is very slay, but it's not cute. It's not cunty. So I don't like,
it's not,
I miss my studded glow in the dark cup. I missed so much. I saw a preview of the Halloween collection this year and it's giving poison apple and I'm not a fan of it.
Mm, I just sent you like a goopy cup. Let me look at what they look at real quick. I hate it when we go off tangents like this. I think it's
so
fucking annoying.
So
but I don't know what to do.
Everyone's like, Everyone's like these stupid fucking dumb bitches. And like, I don't blame them. They're so right for saying that.
You're right. Yeah. If you don't want us to do it, just tell us and we'll take your feedback. But I don't know how to stop. I'm just driving my car towards the cliff.
I've looked it up. Like, I know how, it's like $35 on eBay for the exact one I want, not some like Etsy bitches rendition of it. Peace and love to them though. So anyway, hey, what's up? My name is Noelle, and if you happen to have a 2022 venti Starbucks Halloween glow-in-the-dark lime green studded cup, please DM me. If it's under $30, you're willing to part with it for under $30.
Yeah. The one, and I'm Chelsea, and I'm looking at the 2023 one, and it is just green with, like, green goo dripping from it, right?
Yeah, it's giving, like, poison apple. It's, like, not cute.
Why would they do green on? I don't know. Yeah. Like, this is just so simple, and it's so ASMR.
Yeah, it's ASMR. It looks amazing. Also, like, the actual design of having a glow-in-the-dark cup for when, and that shit shines bright like a diamond. In the middle of the night when it's 3 a.m. and you wake up parched because you've been running in the Sahara Desert in your dreams, and you just like, you see it's just glowing to the left of you, and you just grab it. You know, you don't have to fumble around on your side table that's full of, you know, knickknacks and the portal to Narnia. You just grab the cup because you can see it in your barely open eyes. And that's why the glow in the dark cup is the way.
It does, yeah. And the glow in the dark makes you feel special because it's like, I took all of the stars that were on the ceiling of my childhood and I put them into this cup, and I carry it with me everywhere I go. Well, pouring out for Noelle's cup, pouring out for the beginning of this podcast being completely unrelatable.
I know, it's so unrelatable. It's painful. They're just like these stupid bitches. But anyway, let's talk about more unrelatable things. We're going to be talking about, God, I just want to go ahead and say I'm so sorry for the pronunciations. I went to public school in America, so like they barely teach us English. They don't teach us anything else, and they barely teach us how to read, so I'm so sorry. Teresa de, how do you think this is? Capetta? I don't know if it's like Italian or Spanish. Capetta?
She was born in Spain.
Ahamuda. So
I would say Cepeda y Ahumada.
The Ahumada seems like, it almost seems like not, it seems like Middle Eastern almost, that last name to me. So
a little bit. It does, yeah. But I don't know. You're very, I think your pronunciations are probably just as valid and incorrect as mine are.
Yeah.
So we just call her Teresa.
Yeah, she's Teresa. She would later be known as Saint Teresa of Avila, the patron saint of headaches. Shout out Chelsea's new patron saint.
I know you sent her to me. You just said Saint Teresa of Avila, and I was looked it up, and it was the patron saint of headaches. And I was like, "That's so nice of Noelle. What a good friend."
Don't spoil it.
I won't.
That's what I said.
But like, no, you dumb bitch. She's this, and I was like, "That's still nice."
She can,
you know.
Yeah, she can be two things at once. She's also called Saint Teresa of Jesus, and she was born March 28th, 1515, to a prominent and very religious couple in Old Castile, a city in Avila, Spain. Her mom passed in 1529. Shortly after, even though her dad wasn't too happy about it, she went ahead and joined the Carmelite Convent of the Incarnation in Avila, Spain, which is just like a Catholic convent.
Yeah.
The Carmelites, also known as the Order of the Brothers of Our Lady Mount Carmel, or simply the Carmelite Order, are a Catholic religious order founded in the 12th century on Mount Carmel. You know, that's where Carmelite comes from.
I think this is a good move for women in the 1500s, personally. Like, if you don't want to get married off, if you don't want to be, like, dead in childbirth, mm-hmm. I feel like joining a nunnery, a coven, is probably the way to go.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because I think that, I think I'm very influenced by the devils, which is like my only understanding of a nunnery. And so it kind of does seem a little hot, sexy. But I'm not sure, like, in real history, if it was, like, a good, just, safe place for women to be. But in comparison to the rest of the world at the time, as you say, I bet it was probably better.
Because I'm trying to think, like, what else could you be? Like, I feel like if you wanted to be a midwife, that's a fine line between midwifery and witchcraft. Like, yeah, all you have to do, yeah, all there has to do is be one birth complication for the wrong one.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Yeah. You're burned at the stake. Whereas if you go to a nunnery, at the very least, I feel like you have a routine within four walls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to romanticize it, whatever. I just feel like that's the best option for women.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's three meals of cotton shelter, so.
Because why would her dad is only mad about this because I'm assuming women were currency in which he could have married her off.
Probably. There's probably some value. It didn't go into detail why his dad didn't want her to. Because as far as I know, in history, if you could not afford to have your daughter, because she was like seen as a quote-unquote burden, you would just send her off to a nunnery.
Yeah.
But they came from money, so that wasn't an issue.
Maybe that was it. There was no way for him to secure any more future finances or whatever, secure his place as like a property owning man without
the there couldn't be any like
a birth, like, you know what I mean, like a fertile child,
or like a marriage being a business contract between
I'm doing the bare minimum for this father here and being like, I don't feel like he was just bummed because he was gonna miss her company.
I don't, peace and love to him, I don't think that was the case. So they have that long ass name, and the order has both male and female branches, and the members are just commonly known as Carmelites. It's gone through various reforms and developments over the centuries, but its core focuses are like hours of prayer and solitude. And I'm assuming you highlighted Carmelites to look them up. They're your classic looking nun habits, but they typically are in brown. They're in like brown, and then they have like the white habit on. So it's giving more like Nacho Libre than like Catholic nun for Halloween.
That's the perfect way to describe it, is Nacho Libre type nunnery.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. So
very old, 800 years old.
Yeah, girl, what do you, this is the 12th century. What do you think? Come on. So... the oldest and most reliable written accounts of the origins of the Carmelites are referenced as Latin hermits on Mount Carmel in 1220, and another text from 1263 during the Third Crusade describing them as a group of hermits led by, what is that, Berthold of Calabria, that inhabit the caves of Mount Carmel following the prophet Elijah.
Yeah.
So, whoever he is. I'm so sorry. I can only do so much when it comes to religious history.
Elijah prayed on Mount Carmel.
For what?
Fuck, dude. Let me go back.
Hot fudge Sundays? Because it's Mount Carmel?
he prayed at Mount Carmel, and then, he had a sacrifice. He prayed... the sacrifice burned up like fire, the fire of heaven, and then other Israelites saw it.
They were doing like witchy sacrifices in the Bible.
They did sacrifices all the time, like Cain and Abel. Like the whole Cain and Abel jealousy thing was because Cain brought fruit and Abel brought meat, and meat was seen as a better sacrifice to give to God at that time, because like you're in Eden and fruit and stuff, or like you're near Eden, right? So like fruit you can just go pick, but like to actually sacrifice meat was like way more substantial. And that's why Cain killed Abel, because God praised Abel for bringing him meat. So yeah, there were sacrifices all the time, but it wasn't like human sacrifice, it was just like animal sacrifice.
Yeah, it was. Didn't God try to make that guy kill his son on top of a hill? And then he was about to do it, he said, just kidding.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. So anyway, When Teresa joined, it was pretty relaxed, from what I gather. At her time of entering, the order was receiving a lot of critiques, one being, quote, "In between the conversations, the servants, and the jewelry, there was hardly any time or encouragement to develop a deep spiritual life." And I don't really know what that means, but it feels like a dig. This was feedback from the Given Institute, which is a Catholic study group. And in their critiques, they also failed to mention the torment brought down by the Inquisition. So, like, I don't really know how, like, should we take that with a grain of salt? Because they, like, missed out this, like, really big part of history where, like, these people were being, like, subject to abuse and torture. And so, like, I don't know if we should, like, take them seriously about, like, maybe they were just hanging out and wearing jewelry. Like, I don't really know if that's, like, a fair read of the historical timeline.
Like, they wanted them to suffer harder and not talk to each other. That's almost what it sounds like.
Well, it's like, because the problem with talking about the history of a saint, the history of a woman who was then given the sainthood, is that, like, they have to give her the hero's journey. And I think that they, like, rewrite history to be more, like, biblically cute for, like, a Catholic theme. Mm-hmm. So they had to, like, make it seem like the order at the time was like a Great Gatsby party. It was just like, you know, tits are out and everyone's partying and, you know, on Long Island. And so then she has to, like, come in and fix everything. Like, and they make it seem like that. But then, like, when you look at the actual historical text, it's like the Spanish Inquisition was coming through and, like, torturing people. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I have a very strong feeling, like, it wasn't fucking Jay Gatsby up in here, you know?
Yeah.
But also, I think that's the story they tell.
Raise your priests right so that we don't have to send in our nuns to fix them. Is that not the lesson here?
Not really. It was like, okay, they were saying everyone.
Okay.
They were saying everyone was, like, not taking it seriously. But I love that energy. So, yeah. Teresa was rolling nat 20s on charisma. Guests who would come to the order would fall in love with her. They thought that she was witty and that she had a great sense of humor. And between the Goyles, she was known as a great friend to gossip with, which, as we know, gossip, one of our favorite traits on this podcast.
Beautiful. She was, like, a good time, a girl's girl, just fun.
Yeah.
She was vivacious and lively.
Yeah. And when you look at pictures of her, she was kind of like a little haughty. Like, she looked like a little haughty. So, love that. Unfortunately for her, within a couple of years, her health took a nosedive and she was pretty much bedridden for about 3 years. And it seems like now historians say that she was dealing with both, like, a physical ailment and mental health issues. And in this religious biography, they summarize her as, quote, "She often gave up mental prayer entirely, blaming her illness for her lack of enthusiasm," which I think is just, like, she was so depressed that, like, she couldn't even find the motivation to pray, even though she was living in a covenant.
That's interesting. Yeah. Isn't it? That sick. I'm looking up at, like, what some people think her mental illness was, and I don't see anything. Like, a lot of times they say, like, epilepsy, right? Like, Joan of Arc, mm-hmm. they were, like, currently epilepsy. But they think maybe physically she was – maybe had uterine cancer.
Yeah, she definitely had, like, a physical ailment that caused her a lot of pain. But I also think that, like, based off of some of the summaries in the, like, biographies and synopsis people wrote of her, it almost sounded like she had depression.
Yeah.
As well. And obviously from, like, the physical pain she was going through. So, once she got better, her dedication to the order took a bit of a backseat. And for 15 years, which is, like, a crazy long time, I feel, she was in this in-between state where she would, like, ebb and flow between being present and not caring so much with her apparently strict prayer regimen, which I didn't realize was a thing, that, like, you could live on a covenant and, like, be kind of wishy-washy. But if it's mental prayer, I guess no one really knows, right? If you're, like, not abiding by it.
Yeah, so. I think you have to do quite a bit once you take up the habit, honestly. And it also depends on like what you're in, because some of them, like, their entire premise is never speaking ever, and then some of them it's making honey. Like the one up in Huntsville, they made peanut butter and honey, and that was like their main thing. So I wonder if this one, it was just fucking jewelry, you know what I mean? Maybe that's what they meant by it being lax, that they didn't kick people out if they were clearly suffering from, it sounds like depression if you go for 15 years of just being bummed out.
So I will assume. And it wasn't until her 40s when she was encouraged by a priest to take up prayer again. And she did, but she struggled. And an hour of prayer became a punishment where she just counted the minutes and distractions. She later said, quote, "I was more anxious for the hour of prayer to be over than I was to remain there. I don't know what heavy penance I would not have gladly undertaken rather than practice prayer." Which is, she's so real for that.
Well, it's like,
so real for that.
You know, when you're like in the pit of depression and you're like going to sleep and there's that like fine line of needing to put your phone down and just focus on nothing. I wonder if it was like similar to that, where she's like, I cannot be alone with my own thoughts and I can't, you know, I wonder if there was like a level of just no distraction where she was like, I can't fucking do this.
But I can also see it just being like, you're so checked out. Yeah. I think of it like when you were in like your last class in school and you would just be like pretending to read, but just looking up at the clock and watching every second go by. Or like even a teacher's in a lecture and you're just like looking at that, the seconds go by like physically, because you're just so checked out. I could also see it being that.
Yeah. I would agree.
Some, like myself, would call her visions and supernatural experiences mental illness, but she called them spirituality. And I'm not the only one who thought her visions and conversations with Jesus were a little insane and a little off the rocker. She claimed that Jesus once said to her in a vision, quote, "I would create the universe again just to hear you say you love me." How do you feel about that, Chelsea?
Do you ever come across those TikToks and it's like, sure, you say you love me, but like Achilles said, like, I could die a thousand lifetimes and recognize you and everyone. I don't know what I would say about that.
I feel like this reads to me like Wattpad fan fiction. Like, I'm so fucking lonely. I'm like a fucking femcel living in a cave in Spain. And like, it's against religious text for anyone to touch me. And I'm just so horny. I'm going to sit, like, I'm imagining this in my fan fiction that like Jesus is down bad for me.
You're seeing this as like a sexual type of love, or like a romantic type of love and not a platonic type of love.
This sentence, "I would create the universe again just to hear you say that you love me," is giving 50 Shades of Grey. It's giving supermarket mommy wet dream fantasy core. Are you kidding me? Think about that. That is a line from 50 Shades of Grey, bitch. Come on.
Well, okay, Jesus, so I don't put Jesus in anything where that crosses, right?
If she viewed it as like a romantic
she doesn't even type have of to, thing.
That's how it sounds. Are you that?
But like to a nun, you enter into a relationship with Jesus, right? Isn't that the whole premise? Like you are in a marriage to the church.
Yeah, but like this isn't just a marriage. This is like Jesus is in like a three-piece black suit that's skin tight. And she's on her knees looking up at him and he's like grabbing her face and like getting ready to tie her up. And he's like, "I would create the universe again just to hear you say that you love me." And he puts a gag in her mouth.
I see it as like you're having like,
how can you not see that?
I just don't. I see what you're saying though. Like it's more of like a CW Jesus.
Yes.
In hers, I wonder if it was just like more of a vibe or a feeling of emotion and interpretation that she put words to.
It's just like giving me like cringy mommy fucking Wattpad fanfic. I digress. So obviously there were rumors and some people in the Covenant mocking her. And she, of course, went to go complain to her sexy boyfriend, Jesus, about the rumors. And he said, quote, "Teresa, that's how I treat my friends." And she responded, quote, "No wonder you have so few."
Smite, smite, smiter. I'd like to imagine it goes like how any conversation with like a boyfriend would go, where he's like, which one's Kara again? And you're like, I've talked about her every week. Da, 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 da. You know what I mean? Like, you never know. Yeah. You never listen to me. I don't understand that though.
But also him saying, that's how I treat my friends. Like as in Jesus is like gossiping with the Goyles.
Yeah. I don't understand that at all. That doesn't make sense to me.
Fucking fanfic. It's fucking fanfic. So anyway, that happened. And at 43, Teresa had an encounter with an angel that put her on a path of restoring the old school way of being a Carmelite. Strict, in solitude, and purposefully poor. Because again, those Catholics love a punishment, mama. Mm-hmm. This was met with a lot of pushback, obviously. So she went out to create new covenants and traveled to different cities at night to prevent riots from her appearance and preaching. She wanted the nuns to really focus on divine stuff and do a lot of praying and penance to make up for all the bad shit humanity was up to. So in 1562, with a thumbs up from Pope Pius IV, she started the first official covenant of this new and improved Carmelite reform, calling it St. Joseph's. Are you looking him up?
Mm-hmm.
Is he nasty? Is he crypt keeper? I didn't even bother to look him up. No, I know they all look the same.
He began ruling on Christmas.
Merry Christmas. So Teresa died on October 4th, 1582. Her last words were, quote, "My Lord, it is time to move on. Well then, may your will be done. Oh, my Lord and my spouse, the hour that I have longed for has come. It is time to meet one another," which again is giving 50 Shades of Grey. So on September 27th, 1970, a little bit of a time jump, Pope Paul VI proclaimed Teresa of Avila the first female doctor of the church. The title Doctor of the Church is given by the Pope for outstanding achievements in theology and the transmission of the faith, the spreading of the gospel. She is not a real doctor, which took me a unfortunate amount of research to figure out that's not what they meant.
It's like a doctorate of theology, which makes you a doctor. I know, I read that and I was like, a doctor, who'd she heal?
And so when I first read that and then she was like the patron saint of headaches, I was like, did she like invent Advil? And I was like, no, it is. She did nothing of the sciences. So anyway, but she is one of only four women to date given this title. And of course she was the first. For her, it was for her reforms, obviously going back to the old ways of being miserable, that helped shape Roman Catholic life, and her writings on the Christian soul's journey to God, which I did kind of like read a little bit of it. It reminds me of how the Mormons talk about the different types of heaven and like celestial heaven and like the rules. Like if you're at the top, you can visit people at the bottom, but they can't visit you. Like it reminded me of that. So anyway. And I know you are all probably asking, okay, so what? Let's rewind back to that angel experience she had.
Because but no, you just briefly mentioned that.
I know.
Whoa,
because we're
going to
get into
more?
It now. There's something more. Because almost 400 years later, a man named Ed Carlos would have that same experience, but he called it something else. Ed Carlos is a former fine art professor from the University of the South who has been having alien encounters for the last few decades. In his art, he depicts these encounters, and his experiences were featured in the Harvard psychiatrist Johnny Mack's book, Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens, which came out in 1994. And Johnny Mack is one of my favorite characters in the Rolodex of aliens and UFOs, because he was the first, like, you cannot dispute him. He is a Harvard psychiatrist. And he came out, like, of course, when he started doing his trials, it was through the scientific method. I'm not believing or disbelieving. I'm trying to figure out what's happening. And he came into it thinking that they were experiencing some sort of trauma-induced psychosis, or like trauma-induced like false memories. He did not believe that these people actually had alien experiences or abductions or had seen aliens. He thought that he was going to get to the bottom of it. And spoiler alert, within 6 months of working with these patients, he believed wholeheartedly that they were telling the truth. And I highly recommend Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens. I think everyone should read it. It's super interesting. It is literally one of the most pivotal texts when it comes to UFO history in the United States. And this is the literal first time it was taken seriously.
Yeah, I pulled up the introduction to the book on Amazon. Do you want me to read the first couple bits?
Sure.
In the fall of 1989, when a colleague asked me if I wished to meet Bud Hopkins, I replied, "Who's he?" She told me that he was an artist in New York who worked with people who reported being taken by aliens into spaceships. I then sent something to the effect that he must be crazy, and so they must. But no, she insisted, it was a very serious and real matter. And a day came soon when I would be in New York for another purpose. It was January 10th, 1990, one of those dates you remember that mark a time when everything in your life changes, and she took me to see Bud. Nothing in my then nearly 40 years of familiarity with the field of psychiatry prepared me for what Hopkins had to say. I was impressed with his warmth, sincerity, intelligence, and caring for the people with whom he had been working. But more important than that were the stories he told me from people all over the United States who had come forth to tell him about their experiences after reading one of his books or articles or hearing about him on television. These correspondents, sometimes in minute detail, and those of other abductees or experiencers, as they are called. One of the most specific information that the abductees provided about that is the means of transport to and from the spaceships, the descriptions of the insides of the ships themselves, and the procedures carried out by the aliens during the abductions, which had never been written about or shown in the media. Ooh, it goes on from there. Quite a few pages of introduction. I can't read all of it.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's like 25 pages.
It's great. And I'm not going to let us get into the weeds about it, but it also ties into current day conspiracy about UFOs, because after this book came out and after he started like talking about it more openly and freely and like with a scientific backing, he was randomly killed one day by being hit by a car. So everyone has suspicions about that, because I think like the New York Times was getting ready to meet with him. So anyway, that's a whole other thing. Ed Carlos was also, so he was in that book. He was in the iconic Johnny Mack's book about abductions. And he was also the main point in an independent documentary called Carlos Being of Light, which came out in 2021. Both Carlos and Teresa's encounters were compared in Diana Walsh Pesculka. Academic writings titled From Purgatory to the UFO Phenomenon, The Catholic Supernatural Goes Galactic. And to cite her accreditation, she is the professor and chair of the Department of Philosophy and Religion at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. So everyone's for real here, bitch. And I have the PDF of this entire paper, if you want it.
Send it to me.
Which it's super good. I'm on chapter 24 right now. Anyway, Teresa and Carlos, in their respective timelines, face this small being that they both describe as being made of light. The being stabs each with a sharp, probing instrument. While Teresa recounts this experience as a euphoric encounter with an angel, This can also be seen depicted in the sculpture, Ecstasy of Saint Teresa, which is described as, quote, a sculpture depicting Teresa of Avila swooning in a state of religious ecstasy while an angel holding a spear stands over her. And if you scroll down, Chelsea, I have a zoomed in picture of it, and you should zoom in more on her face because she's giving an O face for sure.
And that arrow is very phallic symbol.
And this is obviously interesting to me because everything in her depiction, which I will read in a second, does not match this sculpture. That is not what she saw. That little cherub angel is not.
Yeah, that's a teenager. That's a tween. Saw.
Yeah. So that motherfucker back there is not real. So anyway, while Carlos will recount this as one of his many alien encounters, Professor Diana explains that both Teresa and Carlos have similar experiences, but are attempting to make sense of their experiences by trying to fit them into their own culture's interpretive framework at the time. For Teresa, this, quote, angel encounter would be what altered her future in her religion and is ultimately what put her on the path of, like, reforming the order.
Man, that was a good probing, yeah.
Some would say.
Imagine right getting probed so hard that you reformed an entire fucking
Catholic
nunnery.
Like the Catholic nuns, yeah.
Damn.
Some would say a hard probing. So this is how she describes the encounter in her autobiography. Chelsea, if you would like to be Teresa.
Beside me, on the left hand, appeared an angel in bodily form, such as I am not in the habit of seeing except very rarely. Though I often have visions of angels, I do not see them. They come to me only after the manner of the first type of vision that I described. But it was our Lord's will that I should see this angel in the following way. He was not tall, but short, and very beautiful, and his face was so aflame that he appeared to be one of the highest ranks of angels, who seemed to be all on fire. In his hands I saw a great golden sphere, and the iron tip, there appeared to be a point of fire. This he plunged into my heart several times so that it penetrated my entrails.
That we all can only wish and hope, mama.
Oh, man. When he pulled it out, I felt that he took them with it and left me utterly consumed by the great love of God. The pain was so severe that it made me utter several moans. The sweetness caused by this intense pain is so extreme that one cannot possibly wish it to cease, nor is one's soul then content with anything but God. This is not a physical, but a spiritual pain, though the body has some share in it. I can't believe you made me read that out loud, you pervert.
Aren't her quotes of, like, her visions and talks with Jesus so tainted now?
Dude, her first orgasm, I had to read that out loud.
But it was religious. Obviously,
I have a ring on my finger, and you're going to make me read that smut.
It was my God. God.
For describing getting probed so hard that her entrails came out.
I told you it was 50 Shades of Grey for Jesus. Golly. You didn't believe me. You were sitting over here trying to be like, no, you don't understand. That's what it's like when you let God in your life. And then we get down to her smut. Like, now tell me.
You never mentioned plunging into a heart so hard that it penetrated entrails.
The foreshadowing was always there. You were just too blind to see. So
the sweet, intense pain was so extreme, and she could not possibly wish for it to cease.
Oh, my fucking God. I love it.
That's good for her.
Yeah, you know, someone's got to get off in this room. It's not going to be Jesus.
It's not going to be you, you frigid, barren woman.
Oh, my God. For her, this experience with this particular being of light did not fit the traditional framework established for angel encounters in the 16th century. I'm going to quote the professor's breakdown of this from chapter 24 of her work. Teresa writes, though I often have visions of angels, I do not see them. Yet she sees this angel. And it is not imaginative, but in bodily form. She notes this difference, which she attributes to God, in saying, "It was our Lord's will that I should see this angel." Catholic theology classifies various types of visions, including intellectual visions and corporal visions, and distinguishes the corporal vision with this description. A corporal vision is when one sees a bodily object. It would appear that Teresa's angel encounter would fit the corporal variety, as she has taken pains to distinguish her visitor as a fleshy alien, as opposed to those she is accustomed to, which are the imaginative variety.
You said alien instead of angel, which is a Freudian slip.
Sorry, a fleshy angel, as opposed to those she is accustomed to. This one she sees with her eyes, yet her editor curiously states otherwise. Teresa tells us more than once that she never beheld a corporal vision. Did she or did she not? The answer is unknowable. But what is significant is the apparent difficulty Teresa and her later editor have in making her experience fit her culturally established framework.
So, if I were to interpret this, she's had visions of angels before, but they're probably like subconscious type things, sleeping dreams, things like that. Mm-hmm. This was her first tangible skin-on-skin experience.
Yeah.
And because at the time they had no concept of alien abductions, alien encounters, probing, you know, things like this, short little men who come into your room at night. And they were like, what the fuck could this be other than an angel? Because that wasn't in their cultural zeitgeist to the point. Like, that's
exactly.
Yeah, that's mind blowing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also why the sculpture of this experience versus her actual description of the quote unquote angel are completely different, because they were going off of the cultural zeitgeist of the time, what they envisioned aliens to be, even though it fully went against her specific descriptions.
Even the sculpture itself, like just looking at it, the top of it is arced, and then the light beams coming down, I think, look very UFO-esque.
Yeah. Yeah. And
all of the background of this screams UFO, but I don't particularly like when you get to the sculpture, it looks like a cherub is getting her. Those little it's like a Cupid. It looks like Cupid.
Yeah, it looks like Cupid. And even in her description of like pleasure and pain, it is very reminiscent of what we would later find out in UFO probing encounters, where like they would feel immense pain or fear, and then telepathically or without like a telepathic body overtaking, they would feel euphoria.
Yeah.
So, and jumping back to our friend Carlos, during a series of hypnosis sessions that were conducted by psychiatrist John Mack, Carlos recollected a childhood incident involving an encounter with a being that hovered in his bedroom. He depicted this being as a formless, yellow, angelic figure that emanated a brilliant, radiant light. Carlos also recounted a smaller light entity, which he referred to as a little creature, just like the light being Teresa encountered. He then notes being pierced with a wand or rod that acted like a needle with a fiery tip. He says, quote, "It shoots laser light into the body, but it feels like a needle because it hurts and it resembles a needle." He ends the session saying he experienced an emotional state of intense euphoria with both apprehension and joy during the encounter. So I ask you and everyone listening, angel or alien?
I don't want to answer a question with a question, but if we're talking about making things fit our cultural zeitgeist, is there really a difference?
I mean, if you want to continue reading the paper that the professor wrote on this, no. But you then also have to ask the question of, is the current cultural zeitgeist the reality? We now have a word and term for it that is separate from religion, So it's its own individual entity in existence now, that it has always existed, but we now have a term for it separating it from. So.
I can see that. And then I would also just be like, is it just potato, potato? Like right now, or what we would traditionally call miracles, now just phenomenon? You know what I mean? Are we just replacing the noun, the adjective, the verb with other things that make sense to us more culturally? Is there really a difference?
I mean, I think we've talked about this before when we talk about biblically accurate angels. You know what I mean? When we talk about the seraphim and the actual depiction, the biblically accurate depiction of a cherub, when we looked at those, I think it was like, yeah, this has got to be fucking aliens. Like, this has got to be fucking aliens. Like, there's no way.
It was more machine than man.
Yeah, it was giving more machine, especially the, God, what was the circle one with, like, it almost looked like metal tracks of eyes.
What was that one called? It's not the seraphim.
No. The wheels one. The seraphim is the eye in the middle and all of the wings around it. That's the one ophanim. Everyone likes to draw.
The ophanim are the eyes, the wheels of eyes.
The wheels of eyes. Yeah, that one is the craziest one. But I don't know, when we actually looked at like the biblically accurate depiction of angels, it was giving very much alien, just like her description of the quote unquote angels is giving very much alien.
Yeah.
And I think the bridge to religion is like the conspiracy of aliens and why they're here. And maybe we were like made from aliens, and you know, that's why we have so many synchronicities across human culture throughout the ages, is because there was that like common thread of this like alien intervention. So
it's fascinating, right? I feel like you can make an argument either way, which is what makes shit like this a topic that's important to cover, because it both fits within the parameters of the podcast, but then also within the parameters of like, you start getting off on religion, like religious discussions where you're like, okay, like for someone like you, right, doesn't hold, takes all of this with like a massive grain of salt, very probably into the realm of sodium poisoning, undoubtedly. When you see something like this, I feel like it becomes easier to digest, because I'd buy into an alien abduction any day. You know what I mean? And I feel like an alien abduction is like the scientific acceptable way, or like, you know, not even acceptable, but I feel like if I were to say, Noelle, an angel came down to a nun and she had a religious experience that made her reform the Catholic Church, you'd be like, shut the fuck up. If I said, Noelle, a UFO came down to a nun and she misinterpreted that to be an angel, which then had massive repercussions to her spirituality, which impacted the Catholic Church. It's a more digestible, right? And I think that's what makes these stories so crazy, because then you're like, if this is an alien, what the fuck else are aliens then?
And that's my question to you, as someone who identifies as like religious, does your relationship to religion change if it turns out that like, the Bible is recounting alien experiences? Like, what, and it sounds so funny to say, but like, would things change for you if Jesus was an alien and like God is an alien overlord?
No, because I'm not going to pretend to even understand the tangible nature of what I believe in.
Cause I think like for me, as someone who doesn't believe in, like God at all, you know, we always laugh and joke about like the PR campaign that God had to go through between like the Old Testament and the New Testament. And objectively, you find lots of contradiction with like supposedly omnipotent, all knowing, all kind, all forgiving, all graceful, and then having these like horrific, torturous, diabolical, you know, outcomes and reasonings. And so the two things for me can't live in the same realm, which is why I don't believe it. But I could believe like God is just like an alien overlord. And he, that's why he's not actually like all knowing and omnipotent. That's why he can't cure childhood cancer, because he's like just a guy. And by a guy, I mean like an alien who has like powers, but not enough to be like so divine. Right. Because even if we're to say like, look at the hypocrisy between God and Satan, Lucifer, why would he create an angel that had the potential to become like jealous and evil and corrupting if he like, cause he's supposed to be omnipotent, all knowing. So he would have known that that would have been the ultimate outcome. So why did he do it in the first place? You know, like why would he even allow that creation to come to be if it was going to cause such strife and misery and torment and evil and such terrible things to happen? And like, why does he allow Satan to come onto earth and meddle with people's lives and tempt them and harm them if he could just smite him out of existence? And it's like, it makes more sense when you realize, because like, if God was as perfect and powerful as the Bible claims he is, then Satan wouldn't even exist in the first place, because he wouldn't have created Lucifer with the traits that Lucifer had. And if you look at that through the lens of like, because he's not actually a perfect God, he's just an alien, it makes more sense to me, at least.
That's what I'm saying, is I think stuff like this makes it more tangible to digest in terms of like atheism, you know, or like even people who are maybe like agnostic, not quite sure what they believe in. I think that these stories have merit enough to talk about, and it's like a fascinating argument, right? Like,
Yeah, I think it's super fun because it's separate. I think the two things are separate. Like,
yeah,
my feelings about religion, and then my feelings about my, I should say this, my feeling, no, because it's all the same God. Every religion is the same God. So I keep that. My feelings about religion, and then my feelings about religious people and the types of religious people, are two separate things altogether. And believing that God is just an alien and Jesus is an alien and all the experiences in the Bible are just alien experiences makes sense to me, in the sense of like, that's why, that's how it got written. That's why, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like, it doesn't excuse the behaviors that humans have created around religion and the ways that they practice it and worship and spread gospel and yada, yada, yada.
I mean, it's always so wild to be like, how could people believe this? And then you see that QAnon bursts forth from the remnants of COVID. And even now, I don't know if you had a chance to watch them yet, but the conspiracy theories that are popping up out of Maui are stuff that I'm like, fuck, dude, I could believe in that, in the sense of socioeconomically, it makes sense to see fires hit certain areas, right?
Yeah.
But there are certain ways of the fires moving, or the fact that like phone services were turned off, you know, things like that, where you're like, fuck, dude, I can see how a conspiracy can take place, because kids were sent home from school that day, and then the phones were turned off. Why? That's why most of like the dead are children who were sent home from school, and then parents couldn't get a hold of them.
Or the fact that like Maui has one of the most like one of the best and most intense like alarm systems for the island, and not a single alarm went off, like a warning alarm. It's just,
how did it get so broken? Yeah. It's easy to see how stuff like this gets its fucking wheels, not to like go off of the opening, but it's like, this is how shit gets wheels. It's like we said at Weber State, where there's smoke, there's fire. And that's why it's like, you're never going to know. Right. Should the not knowing lead you down the path of like ostracizing people, or like hating trans folks, or hating gay people? Those are like such jumps where I'm like, how did it go so wrong? And I imagine that Maui is going to have cultural repercussions the same way that COVID did, in ways that we can't necessarily interpret it. Because it's already, people are already posting pictures of unburned houses.
Yeah.
And they're like, guess who owns this house? And it's people within who have like the connections, so to speak. So,
yeah. Yeah, I get it. No, I get it. I understand how people can fall into conspiracy, because when there's just like 2% truth, it makes everything make sense. But yeah, so that is my question for everyone listening too. Curious to hear your thoughts on it. Feel free to jump on the Discord server and tell us what you think. Angel, alien, or both. And you can find a link to our Discord server in the link tree in all of our bios. We are at Go to Hell Podcast. I am at Noelle Fain. That is at Sith Lard. And not just the link to our Discord server, but you can also find a link to our merch page. 100% of the proceeds are donated, and we have some new designs up because, unfortunately for us, FanX decided to invite Gina Carano as a special guest. And she was that very mid actress who did 2 seasons on The Mandalorian, mm-hmm. and is now mostly known for doing straight to streaming propaganda movies for The Daily Wire, which is owned by Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson and Matt Walsh. And she is most, I would say, most known for saying transphobic and racist things about Jewish people. You know, so that's disgusting. And FanX is doing a really smart PR move. And by smart, I say that with heavy sarcasm, and deleting all of the comments and concerns that, you know, people rightfully so have. And it's turning their comment section into Truth Social. So we have 2 designs up right now. One of them is 2 lightsabers crossing in the trans flag colors. And on the back, it says Jedi or Sith. Hating trans folks makes you a bitch. And then we have one
so good.
And then we have one that is Gina Carano's face, and in the Star Wars font over it, it says, "This is not the way." And 100% of the proceeds will be donated to Chelsea.
Oh my god, I already forgot the charity. It is a, let me pull it up because I don't want to misquote what the charity is. I should have been ready. It's actually a really good one. It's like very educational. Also, like, I don't, people are like, oh, like, then if you should like not go to FanX and support it, but we're not paying to go there. I think people should go and consume things that they love in ways that where it can help them sleep at night. I've said it before, like, if I didn't go to spaces where men made it unsafe, I wouldn't be able to go anywhere at all. But in places like this where we can be advocates, I think it just is important. Maybe we can hold and be, but anyway, if it's shitty that we go there, we just don't have the education about it anymore. Anyway, we're those me trying to find the charity. It's the National Center for Transgender Equality. Let me go into their About Us. It was founded in 2003 by transgender activists who recognized the urgent need for policy change to advocate transgender equality. They have a committed board of directors, and they set out to accomplish what no one has done yet, provide a powerful transgender advocacy presence in Washington, D.C.
So, yeah, check that out. And if you're going to FanX, I highly recommend you wear one of those shirts while you're there. Let them know, right?
100%, yeah. Big, like,
bad corporations like FanX, they make decisions based off of money, so make their wallets hurt for this decision.
Yeah, don't go to her panel, don't support it. There's going to be, like, content creators there. I think maybe Saul Velluto will be there. He's, like, a really cool comic book creator. I'm not sure if the Laity Studios will be there. They will be there on panels. I'm not sure if they have a booth, but... the best part about FanX, in my opinion, other than mine and Noelle's panels, is to go to the creator stuff and get creator content. Like, if you are into, like,
Funko Pops and things like that, and you want to get exclusive things you can only get at FanX, like, I'm not going to shame you, but try to get fucking boots on the ground art from at least one vendor there, because especially with the Hollywood strikes and stuff going on now, like, a lot of actors cannot promote their stuff. And when you have a pop culture convention and you lose out on that funding and that draw, it's like the comic book aspect of it is the only thing that's going to push and keep conventions alive. And I think these sorts of conventions are so fucking important for us to have a space. Because I don't know if you would feel the same way, Noelle, but when I go to FanX, I feel like I'm home because those are my people where I can talk about that stuff. And it's the same thing like FurCon, where that's like a space where people can finally hold space in society. So it is important that we keep them up. But the only way we can keep comic conventions up, where 50% of it is pop culture, is to buy comic book content or creator content.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we've definitely lost the plot on like rising up comic books and comic book creators and artists and like graphic novels and writers. I think that like pop culture and celebrity is just a small piece of the overall pie of like what got us here in the first place, the source material. I think that Comic-Con used to feel like my home. And then I actually got involved, and much like the ending of Wizard of Oz, I know the end. I saw behind the screen and it's ugly. So that's how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. I think, In quoting Joe Dirt, home is where you make it. So I do think that we should be supporting all of our comic book and graphic novel artists, writers, yeah, and creators. Going back to the link tree in our bio, we also have a link for the Maui Strong Fund. Maui Strong is providing financial resources that can be deployed quickly, with a focus on rapid response and recovery for the devastation of the wildfires on Maui. HCF will not be collecting a fee for donations to the Maui Strong Fund. 100% of the proceeds of the funds will be distributed to the community needs. And this is a Hawaii Community Foundation, owned, run, created, all of it by locals. So I do think that is very important. It is put on by Hawaii Community Foundation, just in case I didn't make that clear. In our link tree in our bio, you can also find a link to our Patreon. $1 gets you in, and Chelsea has an update about Patreon.
So we're trying to sync our Patreon with Spotify so that you can just listen to it directly through there. If you are a patron of our Patreon, you don't have to do anything extra. It should just let you play it. This is a new integration with Spotify. So it is still syncing. We have a lot of Patreon content to get up, but keep an eye out for it. That'd be, I think, easier. I personally would not go. I'm not going to say that. Going to Patreon and listening to content isn't as easy as just streaming it from an app that connects your car automatically every time you turn it on.
Yep. So check that out. We also have a link to Kelly Holleran or at Wildwood Owl on Etsy. She makes cool shit for us, and she makes cool shit in general. Go check it out. She has a bunch of the sticker packs left and a few bandanas. Like I said, our Discord server's on there. And I don't know why you'd need it, but you can also find links to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And honestly, we are everywhere podcasts are heard. And let's see here. How am I feeling?
I wonder
today?
Who she's gonna say.
You know, today has been one of those days that tests my patience and has really pushed my buttons, and it just really exhausted me. And there's a fruit fly in my house that has been bothering me, and it's been hanging out in front of my face. There are people doing heroin outside of my front door, and my dogs and I have to jump over used needles. And in these moments, these trying times, these exhausting parts of life, you know, I say to myself, if God is an alien, then what does that make Satan? And I think it's just another alien. So that's why I'm going to go ahead and say a strong, powerful
Stupid.
As strong and powerful, hail Satan, our galactic underlord.
Okay. Dude, I think I had one, and then you saying, what does that make Satan? And I was ready for something very altruistic, and then you just goop me by saying nothing at all. Respectfully.
It was altruistic.
Hail the collective tulpa that is going to form by the people speaking out against fucking Gina coming to FanX, where hopefully she just has a terrible time, and at the very least is constipated.
And uncomfortable, yeah, for sure. And actually, if you're going,
may she experience the same hail, whatever she experiences, may it be the same discomfort that she puts other people through when they're just trying to fucking exist. Hail that.
Hail that 1,000%. Hail that. And if you're going to FanX, let your voice be heard, you know? Let them know. Let them have it. Let it make their job a little hard, you know? I don't think silencing people is the move, so let's just make it impossible for them to keep them silent, so.
Here.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Bye.
Bye.